Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is Thursday. We have made it that far, and we welcome you to the program. Let me introduce the group to you, and we'll get started here. We've got a lot to talk about, of course. We always do, but, you know, we want to make it seem special, even when it may be routine. We also welcome you to write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And you can write to us, and we would love to hear what's on your mind. And who knows, we may even read it on the radio. Let me introduce the group. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you, sir?
Hi, boss. I'm looking at you through the window. Always a pleasant sight to see you there.
Good to see you. Hello. Very, very nice to have you here. We also welcome publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, fresh from a taping of the Media Project, so he is primed and ready. We welcome Ira Fussfeld to the program. Good morning, Ira.
Hello, Joe and everyone. Glad to be back. I love that music. Let's have a show of hands. Maybe we should play that music for the next hour and a half.
Well,
here.
You know, there was a time where I thought it was going to go for an hour and a half because I was late to the studio. But that's okay. My thanks to Mike for making it happen. We welcome counterterrorism expert and best-selling author Malcolm Nance to the show. Good morning, Malcolm.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Yay.
Nice to have you here. Always nice to have you here. And always nice to have Linda Ellerby with us, Peabody and Emmy Award-winning journalist, our dear friend. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
I am fine, thank you. And Ira and Malcolm, it's nice to be on the show with you all again.
Likewise. I feel like I'm a thorn between two roses here.
Oh, really? I feel like the thorn myself. So who are the roses?
Alan.
Thank you very much. I'm here too, Linda.
Okay, we've got a bunch of thorns here. We're still on the lookout for roses.
Well, good morning, everyone. We're off to the races and ready to go. Again, we welcome you to join in the conversation, panel@wamc.org. A panel at WAMC.org, and as I said, we'll get to your letters in just a little bit as we start this morning. Let me go to our first item up for bids, and that is what we heard yesterday in just statement after statement after statement about where we are as COVID-19 hits this country. The Centers for Disease Control had warned that this winter may be the most difficult time in U.S. public health history. Just think about that. The most difficult time in U.S. public health history. Meanwhile, deaths and hospitalizations both set records yesterday. U.S. hospitals are struggling to keep the record numbers of patients alive, the record numbers, and there's so many patients, and they're trying to keep them alive. Also, the New York Times has a quote of saying it's terrible because it was avoidable, about the deaths that have now passed the peak of where they were in April. April 15th was the day that we hit 2,752 deaths in this country due to the coronavirus. Yesterday, it was at least 2,760. Hospitalizations for the first time topped 100,000, more than double the number at the beginning of November. That is a clear indicator of what the days ahead may look like, according to experts. There are some saying, I heard numbers that believe that by the time the vaccine was readily available, by let's say in 3, 4, 5 months, that we could be to 500,000 people, and by the end of the summer could still be approaching 700,000 deaths in this country. And again, that point, it's terrible because it was avoidable, according to experts. So there's a lot to unpack in this and to figure out. I mean, the good news is that there is a vaccine on the horizon. However, that is going to be a long, slow process that will be getting underway. And meanwhile, we still have what Robert Redfield called that most difficult time. Alan.
I don't have much to say except one, I'm completely paranoid about this, and it scares the hell out of me. And I don't think I'm alone about that. Two, the people at this radio station, I'm looking through two windows at you, Joe, and at Big Mike, and the control room, and all the people who are here. You're heroes, because you come to work and you make this happen, and I know how hard that is to do. And that's all I got to say for right now, but it does scare the hell out of me.
Wendellerby.
Well, I stand with Alan on this, and you just said something that I find so odd, and I keep hearing it. It was avoidable, according to experts. You didn't have to be an expert to see this coming.
That's true.
I mean, any common sense. There is a pandemic. There is a virus. Wear a mask. It will help keep you safe. Wash your hands. Stay socially distanced. If you don't, bad things will happen. It got totally political. People didn't do those things. Bad things are happening. There is no shock here. There is no surprise. There is only a great sadness, and on my part, a sense of rage that I cannot get out of me.
I want to talk about...
I don't know what to do with that rage.
You know, I want to talk about that rage, because I was talking to my brother on the way in this morning, and he said, oh, I'm going to have to listen. He lives in North Carolina. He said, oh, I'm going to have to listen in, because you sound angrier than I think I've ever heard you. It's hard. I think the rage is hard. And I don't know for you, Linda, but at least for me, of when you read all of these records that we're breaking, and they're horrible. I mean, it's horrendous. And you're talking about basically, and I know this is a shortcut that I don't really like, but it is as if it is a 9/11 every day. And that is horrible.
Exactly.
And stunning when you add it up over months and months and months and months. And meanwhile, what action was taken in Washington, D.C. yesterday was a 46-minute diatribe from the President of the United States. And that, for me, is where a lot of that anger comes from.
Well, that I can't lay it all at the feet of the president.
But it is.
I mean, we are all, as a nation, to blame, or at least half of us are to blame for this. We were told what would happen if we didn't do certain things. We didn't do the certain things. It happened. Guess what? Actions have consequences. Here are our consequences laid at our feet. There was a story I read in the last week somewhere, and honest to God, I don't remember where I read it, or I would cite the source. But it was a healthcare worker. It was a nurse, and he was talking about sitting with a man who was going to die that night and holding the man's cell phone to his ear so his family could one by one say goodbye to him.
Right. I mean,
these healthcare workers are used to death, but people don't usually die at this rate. They don't die this horrible way with tubes sticking out of them and trying to clear the mucus from their lungs. And they don't die all alone saying goodbye or not even being able to talk, listening to goodbyes. This is horrible. Fine. This is the result of our actions as a nation, or inactions.
Inactions, and I certainly I do not mean to say that there isn't some personal responsibility here. There certainly is, but there's also
entirely a personal responsibility here.
There is,
entirely.
But there's also
in
no
the
leader.
End, it is each of us making our own coronavirus rules.
I agree. But there's also a lack of leadership. There is nothing being done on a federal government level right now.
You're right on that.
I mean, so that's what, and the states are trying to get guidance. Nobody is giving guidance, and people are just trying to do what they can do without getting fired in the process. Malcolm Nance.
Well, as much as I agree with Linda that there's a lot of personal responsibility going on in here, this was an avoidable catastrophe. They said if we had taken the measures that South Korea had taken in the first month of the epidemic, which was to take it seriously, throw national resources at it, mobilize the nation, educate the nation, that our death rate would have been about 9,000 people. It's not just a comedy of errors. Many of these decisions that came from the White House were quite deliberate, especially withholding resources from the states. Jared Kushner said that that belonged to the federal government and not to the states, and resisted giving anything out except to governors who were amenable to Donald Trump. This is negligent mass murder. It's not even, you know, it's not even a question of incompetence. I think it was malicious in many, many different respects. You guys remember every month for the last 6 or 7 months, Alan and I said that somewhere out there that they were pushing this philosophy of herd immunity.
Right.
And then Donald Trump hired this radiologist to be the head of the coronavirus pandemic team. And he was advocating tacitly, not openly, herd immunity. Well, he's since just quit. And now we've got a nation that is sick. The entire nation is sick. And our only salvation, to be honest, especially for those of you listeners who didn't vote for him, is Joe Biden coming in and now mobilizing the nation on the scale that we should have mobilized 1 year ago.
Alan, anything you...
Yeah, I want to ask Malcolm why. Malcolm, is it insanity? Is there political impetus for this, in your view, from the Trumps? I mean, what in the world could result in this inaction that you're describing?
I'm gonna be quite honest, which I usually am, but sometimes I do pull my punches. I've been, you know, this last couple of months, I've been monitoring right-wing extremist websites, going right up to Parler, which is where most the politicos and right-wing conservative thinkers are going, their alternative for Twitter. Their hatred of anyone who is not in their tribe, that's the Trump tribe,
mm-hmm.
their hatred is off the charts. I mean, dangerous. And I'm saying this as a career intelligence professional. If this was another country, I'd be putting out warnings left and right that there's going to be mass violence. And they're talking about violence. But I think the entire mindset of Donald Trump has amplified the inner demons of many Americans, as many as 70 million Americans.
Mm.
And I know I got in trouble on Bill Maher's show 2 weeks ago, where he was espousing kumbaya and comedy, and I was espousing that these people really are looking for revenge, and that they are talking about sedition, you know, taking up arms in civil war. They have an inner hatred of anyone who is not them. And I've seen this in terrorist groups, militia groups, and other groups that were enemies of the United States. They have harnessed the inner wrath and ego of Donald Trump and have made it their own. And they now cannot reconcile what's happened. And to them, the government is now an evil machine, that the deep state that stole the election from Donald Trump. And now they're talking about getting even.
To the point,
Malcolm, do you think that we've all speculated on what Trump's motivation has been vis-a-vis Putin and Russia. Do you think this is another indication, his lack of leadership on that, that the crises that is occurring in this country right now is destabilizing this country, and that, again, that Trump is doing it because of whatever it is that Putin has on him?
And I do.
No.
And we only have half a minute, so go ahead.
Okay. I don't think it has anything to do with whatever debt that he owes to Vladimir Putin. But Vladimir Putin is a spy master, knows the kind of guy that will destroy the United States. He put his bet on him, and he won.
All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue. We welcome you and your letters. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we'll continue. We have a great panel today. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Malcolm Nance, and Linda Ellerbe. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Malcolm Nance, and Linda Ellerbe. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Let's go to some letters here. Nicholas writes, yes, it is frightening and was totally avoidable. And in recent news, there are legislators in two states bringing articles of impeachment against governors. You have DeSantis in Florida giving interviews stating no masks and no shutdowns. No restrictions. This country is almost unrecognizable. And in NPR this morning, there was a story that there is no guidance for the coming vaccine. States determine their own guidelines. Rosemary brought it up yesterday. The rich and the entitled will be first in line. There is no leadership in this country, and it's getting worse, as Malcolm just pointed out. We go to Megan.
But you know, you've got... I'm not a huge Andrew Cuomo fan, but I respect a lot of what he's done during this pandemic. And he's attempted to provide leadership in New York. And if you happen to see the New York news last night and what was going on in Staten Island, Cuomo and his team imposed guidelines and rules about what should be open and what should be closed so there'd be no further spread of this virus. And what did you have outside of a closed bar in Staten Island with what, hundreds of people protesting his decision or the decision? Again, many of them not wearing masks, and they're just thumbing their nose at leadership. So clearly Washington has provided very little to no leadership, but here's a state where they are attempting to, and it's largely being ignored.
And that gets to what you were talking about, Linda, of where this becomes personal, the personal responsibility.
Yeah, and that's where we enter into the area where we do not currently, as a nation, have any consensus on reality.
Right.
On what reality is, on the basic experience, the concept of reality. If we can't agree on what the reality is, you can't expect people to behave in a real way.
Ross writes, good morning, panel. Malcolm Nance just said something I've been wondering about for a long time. How is the president's actions not negligent manslaughter? His actions knowingly caused harm and death. Though not intended, which would be murder, his very public displays have caused death. The knowledgeable disregard for public safety and subsequent death is exactly what the charge of negligent manslaughter is written for. Malcolm, please explain.
You know, during the Argentinian Dirty War, when the junta down there was going after communists, they were kidnapping and torturing and killing people by taking them out over the ocean and throwing them out of airplanes at 30,000 feet. The reason I mentioned that is the people that really brought attention to this and brought them down were the mothers of the lost, los madres del desaparecido. And they would march in circles every day around the presidential palace with pictures of their dead children and not say a word. There will have to be some accountability for the hundreds of thousands of people who've died. And I suspect that at some point, someone's going to make up an organization like this, and they're just going to keep reminding people of the 100, 9/11. Did I say 100? I think it's 1,000. Might even be 10,000 9/11 level deaths that we've had. This isn't, it was an accident at first, and it became negligent homicide when Trump started withholding resources and materials because you didn't kiss his butt. Someone's going to have to bring this up on a national scale. And I think it should be the families who've lost people.
Mm. We got a letter from Megan who says, why are people, journalists, pundits, etc., not using the word treason? Alan?
Go ahead, Malcolm. I know you're going to.
Yeah, I defined this. Treason is one of two crimes in the Constitution. Bribery is the other. Treason is a very specific crime. You must be working for a foreign power in time of declared war. We are not in a declared war. If you want to use it rhetorically, knock yourself out. But technically, you can't send them to jail for treason.
Knock yourself out.
Well, no, I think Malcolm's exactly right. It is in so many of our minds treason, and I think history is going to treat it that way. You know, here's a president who says, for the next 4 years, I'll be out there on the sideline mobilizing my 72,000 people to stay with me. I'll come out on the day of the inauguration and say it and the rest of it. I don't think history is going to be kind to Donald Trump. I think that when the full extent of what has happened here comes out, he's going to be, in a terrible spot, and for history will record him that way, much as in the Jewish holidays, Haman is described.
Hmm. And not to be flip, but you know, by then, a lot of dead people.
No question. Already, Joe, a lot of dead people.
Let's go to this one. Betty says, I must disagree with Linda. It's very much on the president. Calling the virus a hoax has given permission for people to not listen to the necessary precautions from public health officials. Would you like a stab
Could
at
that? Could I respond to that?
Absolutely.
I never said that I did not blame the president and the administration. I do. I also blame everybody whose response it is also the responsibility of each one of us. Even if you had a responsible president in there making a national plan, thinking ahead and doing all of these things and saying you must wear masks, you must social distance, you must do these things, it wouldn't matter if people don't do them. So we can't just say, well, this is just Donald Trump's responsibility. Every day, each one of us makes a series of choices throughout our day. And the problem is each one of us defines what is safe behavior. And there's not a consensus on behavior on that. There is definitely a consensus of science. There is a consensus of what it ought to be. But if people do not individually choose to make these choices correctly all day, every day, then it doesn't matter what the government's saying.
So, Linda, what's on their minds?
In this case, we have a terrible government, but what we can't do is turn around and say, well, that gives us permission to engage frivolously in any kind of behavior we want simply because our government has been irresponsible.
So what could possibly be on their minds? That's what I want to know, Linda. I mean, you've hit the nail on the head, obviously. People aren't doing what they should be doing. What's going on in their heads?
Well, I think it's what last time I was on, I got a lot of flack for saying that we're a nation that doesn't pay any attention to health advice. We know obesity causes strokes and heart attacks. We know these things. We know that drinking can be hugely alcohol. Too much alcohol is harmful. We know the dangers of smoking. We knew the dangers of seatbelt, but until seatbelts were outlawed and enforced at a national level, nobody changed. We are very good at not ignoring what's good for us.
Anyone? Okay.
Well, we've all seen videos, and if you haven't seen them, they're not hard to find, of people walking into stores like Walmart, or it doesn't matter what the store is, and the workers there attempt to escort them out if they're not wearing masks, and they don't go quietly. They make a ruckus, and they throw stuff, and they curse, and again, as Alan says, what's going through their minds? They're willfully ignoring a regulation that ultimately is going to help them stay safe, and how can you figure that out? And as for the history of Trump and can you imagine 100 years from now when they write the history of this pandemic and the historians say, you mean they didn't wear masks and they could have worn masks and it would have helped save lives and they didn't do it? I don't understand it. That's what history is going to say.
Will writes, do you feel Trump's shakeup at the Pentagon is to destroy records at the Pentagon, records of crimes, conversations with Putin, etc.? What do you know of the credible story out of Great Britain that Kushner was involved in the greenlighting of Khashoggi's murder, also the subsequent blackmail of Erdogan of Trump to throw the Kurds under the bus? These are all for you, Malcolm. All because Erdogan had the Saudi embassy bugged and had everything on tape.
Well, let's start off with the easy one. The Pentagon, no one's going to be destroying documents at the Pentagon. They're private emails. Maybe. We found out during the Mueller report that they couldn't get access to certain things on Signal. because people wouldn't turn them over and they couldn't crack their encryption. But anything that's on government servers goes to the cloud. That stuff is reproducible. It's almost impossible to destroy unless you're going to be destroying banks of servers in Cleveland, Ohio. That's not going to happen. So I suspect, and you know, I wrote this in my last book on the Trumps. They had this attitude that they were masters of the universe when they won in 2016. Their instant operating philosophy was, we own everything. We can do anything. And I suspect that they just sent all of their nefarious plans out in the open. And, you know, I think we're going to have, you know, somebody, I said this the last time I was on air, and I'll repeat it again. Someone tweeted this the day after the election, and it was a very simple one-sentence tweet where they said, we are going to find out everything.
Mm.
And we are. I mean, I just can't even imagine what the inspector generals who were fired, when the inspector generals go back to all the agencies, start filing in the complaints, people start going through the records, and we already determined that they took a hand vote to cage children and steal them from their parents. And I've said many times on this show, we're going to find the Vonnegut documents. That was the conference that was held to have the Holocaust, to approve the Holocaust. I think we're going to find Vonnegut-level documents on COVID, where they took a vote and said, well, we're just going to let this thing burn through the country. And that's where we're going to have real, I mean, it's going to be years worth of books on this administration. But Trump is planning on, you know, trying to run for 2024 so that we never look back, so that we're constantly in his, you know, his mind game.
Can I ask another question of Malcolm relative to treason?
Sure.
We've all heard the discussion about Trump being given, as a former president, security information about this country, and there's been a lot of concern expressed about what he is going to do with it, whether it's simply loose lips sink ships and he repeats it innocently to the wrong person, or if he in fact formally passes this on to the Putins of the world. Malcolm, do you believe that the intelligence in this country would be able to follow the trail and be able to pick up on that if, in fact, Trump does that?
Yeah, we would. And however, I think the Biden administration is going to be clearly informed by whoever the new next director of national intelligence, director of CIA, NSA. They're probably going to make a recommendation to the National Security Council that the courtesy of giving an ex-president or that ex-president top secret, sensitive code word, special access information should be discontinued for Donald Trump. It's a courtesy. It's not in law. Donald Trump has defied norms and courtesy. We're going to find out very quickly. I'm certain that they traded on intelligence. And that goes to the previous questioner's comment about Jared Kushner and Khashoggi. You know, knowing about the murder of Khashoggi and covering up for it. We know they covered up for it. Donald Trump admitted that in public, that, you know, he had covered for the Saudis. We're going to learn a lot of things, and those people should never be allowed access to anything for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, that's good. I didn't realize it was simply a courtesy. It's reassuring if, in fact, Biden does what you suggest.
You know, one of the reasons that I've been so interested in Trump's refusal to leave office has been what we're talking about now. What's going to come out, Malcolm, Ira? It makes a great deal of sense if you think that he is so desperate that, A, he has to resort to pardons of everybody around him. Obviously, something's going to come out, and that's what he's afraid of. But also, he's desperate because he knows that history is not going to treat him well, and that there's no real way out of this thing except to try to do a putsch, which is what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that this is more about ego. But in what we don't know about Trump's ego is what his fears really are. Mm. And I really think that he does believe now that Democrats are going to behave like him. and that Biden is going to use the entire government to come after him. The horrible thing for Donald Trump is that Biden's not going to do that. However, a new attorney general will not be able to ignore crimes. And whoever it is going to be neck deep in prosecuting people for Hatch Act violations. This is not a time for kumbaya. Accountability must happen. And I think Donald Trump knows that between Letitia James and whoever the next attorney general is, he's going to prison at some point.
All right, let's pause there. We'll have just like a moment of kumbaya, and then we'll be back. And we'll all feel better.
I love that song, by the way.
Yeah, and we'll we'll be back. Alan Chartok,
Ira
Fussbaum, Malcolm Nansen, Linda LRB. We'll be back right after this. Susan writes to us and says, frankly, we have the dumbest, most willfully, woefully ignorant citizens on the planet. Except the ones listening to this radio station, of course. Panel at WAMC.org if you'd like to share your thoughts.
She's right.
I got nervous. I thought you were going to say the most ignorant people on the panel. But...
No, I don't know if we were included in that or not. Malcolm, you agree with her, though.
I agree. I'm sorry. I've been around the world. I've been to a rodeo and seen a state fair or two. 50% of this country is pretty dumb. And I mean any group of people which would willfully risk not only their lives, the lives of every member of their family, and say that it's their right and freedom, and then get in their car and put on their seatbelt. I mean, they don't understand. Or not light up a cigarette, or step outside to light up a cigarette, right? It's just, they don't understand. This is damaging the nation. And it is a terrorist attack every, 9/11 attack level attack every 48 hours. And they don't care. It's horrible.
Let's see. Let's go to letters here. Gloria writes, Don't think that Trump believes or cares what history says. Likewise, his thick-headed followers. Two, if not treason, how about sedition? Go, Malcolm.
Oh, I want to hear Linda on this one. I feel a rant, one of her rants are coming.
No, actually, I was waiting for you, Malcolm. I was sitting here quietly, not thinking.
Oh, my God.
All right, well, who wants to talk about sedition?
You do my thinking for me.
It's not sedition. People have a right to freedom of speech. It's when they organize and prepare to bear arms and take on the government in an illegal manner. Then their speech becomes seditious. I fought for the right for these people to say any stupid thing they want. I risked my life for decades for you to be as dumb as you want to be. However, when you decide that you're going to go after a governor or lay siege to a state house like they plotted in Michigan, where their plan B was to take a hostage barricade, the state house, and kill all of the Democratic Assembly members, then we're talking sedition.
Well... And so how does that then play to exactly what you're talking about? How does that then play into what is happening much less, much more in the open in Georgia, where you're criticizing the Republican governor, you're criticizing the Republican Secretary of State, you're having your surrogates, whether they're fired or not, go out and tell people not even to vote because they can't trust the election in a two Senate runoffs that will decide the balance of the U.S. Senate,
or to send death threats. And think about that guy who stood up, the Republican who stood up, who's in charge of the elections, and I don't know if it's Georgia or where.
It was Georgia.
And literally come close to tears as he says, this has got to stop.
It's got to stop because somebody is going to get hurt. And that's what I mean. It's much more out in the open. And who knows what, is it Saturday or Sunday that Trump is going to Georgia over the weekend? What's going to happen there?
Well, I think it's quite clear that that Trump will go, and now we're hearing that Biden will go, and the future of this country is now on Georgia. And
well, don't worry, because the Republican lawyer has told Georgians not to vote in this election.
Well,
Georgian
yeah.
Republicans.
Yeah.
So it ought to be a shutout.
And not only the Republican lawyers, but basically the Trumpers. Trump
right.
did. But now Trump has got to undo the mess he got us into, or he got them into. I certainly want to take back the us. Got them into by going back down there and said, just kidding, you really have to go out and vote.
And let's not forget, in that Hall of Fame that you just recited, Joe DiGenova, the lawyer, suggesting or saying that Krebs should be shot. This is the guy who Trump fired.
Chris Krebs.
After saying the election was secure.
Yeah. It's, and so if you're, I know, so I'm going back to what Linda was talking about earlier about what's reality. I don't know anymore. So I'm going to ask what I think at one point in our world would have been a perfectly rational question, but I know it no longer is. But if you're running for Senate in Georgia, and you know the president is going to come in, and we expect that he's probably going to talk more about himself and how he was robbed. Do you want him?
I don't think it matters whether you want him or not. He's coming, right?
Do they have a choice?
Yeah.
But he's going to go in there and do a version of his 46-minute speech from last night, reminding everybody how dishonest elections are, and then say, oh, by the way, go vote for the Republicans. Well, I mean, who are we going to be listening
you
to?
You know,
Trump
Ira,
A or Trump B?
You know, Ira, you make a very good point. Remember what happened in Georgia. They didn't turn on the Republicans. They turned on Trump. Trump lost in Georgia. The Republicans didn't lose in Georgia. Down ballot, we see that all over the country, right? So if Trump comes in, it's a reminder that they voted against him. Good point.
So you,
I
go
also,
ahead.
I don't know how many of the people out here listening watched Trump's speech last night, watched that tape of his. It's on YouTube, should you any of you care to watch it. It was both extraordinary and not at all surprising. I mean, the lies, the New York Times refers to, uses another more polite word, but falsehoods. But they are lies, and that is a good word. Let's not water it down by calling it falsehoods.
72 million people voted.
We say lie.
Linda, 72
million. And he went on and on. I mean, his statement that statistically it is impossible that he lost. Overall, in watching it, my reaction in watching that tape was that he looked and sounded like he was doing a very bad Alec Baldwin impression.
He did.
An impression of Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, no, he did. You're absolutely right. And when he brought out the charts and showed like Wisconsin, and there's just a steady line, and then all of a sudden at 3 o'clock these votes showed up in Wisconsin, and, you know, you want to just... You know, the rational part of you just wants to tap him on the shoulder and say, "Oh, that's when they included the mail and absentee votes."
You know,
but I know that doesn't matter. Yes,
this is an adoration exercise or self-adoration exercise. He needs to be out there. He needs to have that big head energy that he thinks that he exudes by standing in front of people and doing fist pumping. But the opposite side of that coin is that this is going to end up being a mobilization exercise for all the Democrats who haven't registered or gotten their absentee ballot. I suspect his presence now coming down and attacking the state, not just the Republicans who are leading the state, but the state itself, calling the state a base of fraud, is going to also remind Democrats that this is round two. And they need to vote at the same level as they did as round one. And I think it will endanger their chances for the Senate.
Let's pause there. When we come back, we will continue. We have more letters. We have more topics. We have much more to talk about. And we will do all of that after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Malcolm Nance, and Linda Ellerbe make up the group this morning.
Trying to go quiet her dog at the moment.
No, that's all right.
It ain't Murray.
No,
I don't know what is happening.
That's Luna,
Luna,
right?
Luna is alert. excuse you all shut off my mic while I do this.
Okay. All right. Well, oh, that was quick,
there
Mike.
She goes.
Nice. Wow, you have supreme power, you have, Mike. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the program.
Sir, I can't talk right now. What is this about?
Just about the wall.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. All right. Anybody else have any business to take care of? Okay, we're good. Welcome back. Let's go to the letters. And we welcome Carl, who says, could you please ask Mal? I think you discussed this, Malcolm, right, about the staff purges at the Pentagon and the motivations behind them. We talked about that,
yeah,
didn't we?
We talked about that last week and or a couple of weeks ago. Those purges are just so that those people can get chyrons on Fox News. They have no ability to do anything unless Donald Trump decides he's going to execute the Insurrection Act, and that's where the Secretary of Defense would have some authority. However, every person below him in the armed forces will refuse to execute those orders. They're unlawful orders.
Malcolm, you're getting a lot of requests this morning. Adrian would like to know your views on Mike Flynn's calling for martial law and suspension of the Constitution.
That's just crazy. I've been monitoring that for the last couple of days. It's all over right-wing extremist world to call for, quote, limited martial law and for the armed forces to carry out a new election. This is a QAnon fantasy. And Mike Flynn has gone full-on QAnon. That guy's dangerous. And now the way he's behaving after this whole scandal with him and the Russians, I'm really starting to believe those rumors that we heard when he was at Defense Intelligence Agency, that he may have actually, gone over to the Russians. I don't know. That's a rumor. But you know what? He's acting really nuts now. And this is dangerous. Oh, by the way, if you want to use the word seditious, that is seditious speech.
Well, thank God he got a pardon, right?
Well, that's the whole point, Joe. I mean, I think that's the whole point. You give a guy a pardon, and you don't modify his behavior. You just make it worse.
Julie writes, in today's news, Elise Stefanik is repeating Trump's accusations about illegal ballots. She says she's seen numerous examples of dead people voting, signatures not matching state records on absentee ballot envelopes, double voting, and absentee ballots not being counted at all. Is she being called out on this? It's the same lie that Trump is peddling, and it's pretty universally dismissed.
Well, look, she's got it in her mind. She knows full well that the Trumpers will brook nothing else, and they voted her in, and they're keeping her in by large margins, and she's not going to switch and say, well, this is just wrong. On the contrary.
And that's regardless of whether she's called out on it.
She wants to be vice president in the next Trump administration. No, I'm serious. She'll stay on his good side, and we'll see how it sorts out. She might be a female candidate who will rise to the top in his view.
Let's go to Michael, who says, this holier-than-thou attitude that comes from the left is sickening, quite frankly. A bunch of supremely enlightened people sitting around calling half of the people in this country stupid. Just another example of slanted media pushing their superiority complex on people. A disgusting and shameful example of broadcast journalism. Congratulations, says Michael.
Let me step in on that one.
Okay, all right. Something to say here. I spent 40 years as a broadcast journalist, and for 40 years, and I wrote 3 books about during this time, and for 40-some-odd years, all I talked about was that it was the fault of people in broadcast news because we did not give enough credit to the intelligence of the viewer. And over and over, I said, you know, the viewer is at least as smart as we are and probably smarter, and we don't give them credit enough, and we don't give them the credit. I'm sorry. The last 4 years, I have been forced to face my own illusions. That's simply not true. There are dumb people out there, willfully ignorant, dumb people. And for us to say they're dumb and willfully ignorant is called accurate reporting.
Malcolm, the plumber in Albuquerque was where I first learned that,
yes,
in Linda's book.
Yes. In the plumber in Albuquerque. I've lost faith in all people who believe that education and intelligence and knowledge are bad things. and not as good as their ignorance.
A word for the plumbers. I talk to the people who come and fix things in our house. And I got to tell you, they're pretty smart, the electricians and the plumbers. I don't want anybody to walk away and saying all plumbers are dumb because they're not.
No, nor do I want anybody to walk away think that I really think all people are dumb or that I think that all people, the journalists, are dumb. But what I do think is what that man just said is pretty angry and uneducated. There are people out there who are being willfully ignorant, and that's what I called out. And I stand by it.
Malcolm, your turn.
You know, I've mentioned this several times before on this show. What's happening here is a perfect example of an information bubble that's been built out of propaganda and lies. As I monitor these right-wing extremist groups, the first thing that's said when there's a dissenting voice, the first thing that's said is, you're listening to that liberal mainstream media. Okay, to all you listeners who think that this is just a liberal journalist plot, I am not a journalist. I take pride in that. I am a former U.S. intelligence officer. I just happen to write down in books the assessments, and you can read them. I am trying to warn you that the things that are happening out here are happening in spite of you. They are using the fact that you have only one source of information, or you don't listen to opposing voices. I listen to opposing voices all day long. The problem is, as a professional whose job it was to keep you safe from horrible people, is that the people who have taken Donald Trump and made him this cult figure, you are becoming like those people that I had to protect America from. There's talk of sedition and open warfare all over the place now on the internet. And we can't tamp it down. I don't know how we're going to be able to do it. And I suspect the only way that we'll be able to recalibrate is someone will carry out a mass murder attack, and then law will punish them. And then these people will say, well, I didn't want to go that far. Well, we shouldn't have to go that far.
Right.
You know, I got two electricians in my house and they're awesome. But you know what? I don't have to worry about them plotting to overthrow the U.S. government.
That idea of recalibration, I mean, it's a great point. And I just don't. What does it take? I mean, if obviously you have mentioned the extreme. But in the meantime, how patient are we for that recalibration?
Well, you know, Joe, if I can, I've often said that a lot of this is about racism. It's a lot of it is about who's on top in this country and the fear that half the country have that the others are gaining on them, and quote, the others are gaining on them. When that happens, when Joe Biden becomes the president, yep. when we find that the worst fears of this crowd have not been met, I think we're going to get a little bit more sanity in the body politics.
Except if the bubble that Malcolm describes rightfully holds, and I don't doubt that it will hold because there are right-wing sources of information in broadcast cable, social media, and in print that followers are devoted to and listen to nothing else but, and unless there's a startling change in the message coming from those areas, and I don't expect it, the next 4 years is going to be them nipping at the heels of Biden and teeing up Trump or somebody else for the next election.
Well, I hope Joe Biden is smart, as I think he is. I think he's going to make an assessment as we go on, whether they're doing damage or whether they're just mouths and lips flipping in the wind or flapping in the wind. Ira, I think history is going to take care of this for us.
And I know we've talked about this before, but it does seem to be that, and I know it's extremely early, but to your point, Alan, it seems like what we've been hearing from Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and the transition team is very, measured and seems to be Absolutely. Understanding of what is happening and ultimately what needs to be done.
You know, I think he's trying to play it down as much as he can. He does not want it to he doesn't want this simmering embers to explode into real fire. And for that, you have to give him a tremendous amount of credit.
All right. Let's go to Khan, who says, there is historically a powerful strain of anti-intellectualism in this country. Faux news and the right-wing radio sphere have been advancing ignorance since the 90s, seeding the ground for a demagogue like Trump. Critical thinking has been outlawed in some school districts and red states. So, yes, we have a dumbed-down electorate. Ken writes, the right wing had a huge turnout on November 3rd due to 45's maniacal cult of personality. Other down ballot candidates were incidental votes. There will not be the same right wing turnout for the upcoming runoffs in Georgia. The Dems have a chance. Well, we've talked a lot about that over the last week on this program, and we seem to be mixed on it.
Well, the Shartakian view of it, Joe, is that you have to go with the stats, and the stats are saying that the Republicans have a better chance than the Democrats do. Into all of this comes so many variations. Trump coming in, will that hurt them or will it help them? Biden coming in, will that hurt them or help them? The Georgia voters, do they think that they don't want to go too far, that they've made their choice on Trump, but they want to keep their state Republican? Those are all the questions I'm looking at, and I don't know the answers.
Let's see. Anybody else on that? Linda, did you want to get in on Georgia?
No, I don't know any. I don't have the answers either to anything. A blanket. I don't have the answers. I'm lucky if I can come up with a good question occasionally.
Well, I think it is interesting though when we see what's going to what we're seeing in Georgia of how the Democrats are running a good race. The Republicans are having a lot of trouble because of the president's interference. And obviously, it's a long time between, you know, January 8th is still a long way away. But there's money coming in. I don't know. It can't be. Let's see if on a worry scale, it would have to be more on the Republican side than on the Democratic side.
I don't think so. I think there's plenty to worry about. And there are so many variables, Joe. Variable number one is, will the African-American vote come out as it has, as it did in the presidential election? That's a huge variable. Number two, Trump coming in. Will it help or will it hurt? Biden coming in. Will it help or will it hurt? All of these are incredibly important questions. The fact is, my mailbox every day has Warnock and all the other guys, all the other people, the Democrats, as well as Republicans, asking me for money. So that the theory out that's floating around out there is outside money can only hurt you. I don't know. They're sure asking for it.
Absolutely. Ira?
I wonder, as his name has not yet come up this morning, and I would feel remiss if we didn't raise Mitch McConnell's name, and as it relates to why he continues to be relatively silent about this transition period and the theory being that he is waiting to see what happens in Georgia. In light of what's happened in Georgia and the rhetoric coming out of there the last 24, 48 hours, one would think that this is the time for him to step up and say something to try to reassure his Republican base in Georgia that they better go out and vote for Republicans. So I'm not sure where he's at in all of this, and you know, we could drive ourselves crazy trying to read his mind, but I do wonder that even if they retain the Senate, it will be by a narrow margin. You've got a handful of moderate Republicans who could jump to the other side, and you got an election coming up in 2022 where other Republican senators could be vulnerable. So I'm not quite sure what his game plan is.
I don't think they're going to jump to the other side. I think what they're going to do is on a case-by-case basis, they will vote with the Democrats on some things, like, for example, you know, some kind of relief for the downtrodden people who can't put food on their tables and other things like that. I doubt that they're going to become Democrats, because we know what happens when they do that. The Democrats don't trust them and the Republicans hate them.
Right. No, I didn't mean to imply they'd switch parties, but I do think on case-by-case basis they would have their votes.
Yep.
Hildegard writes and says, municipal councils in Virginia are passing local ordinances against health provisions required by the state. Talk about ignorance, says Hildegard. Jason writes, it's so discouraging that the government has had almost a year to plan for the production and distribution of vaccines. It's been clear since the beginning that vaccinations were going to be our only way out of the pandemic, and yet there are still considerable uncertainties about priority groups, locations, storage, et cetera, et cetera. We should be ready for mass distribution as soon as approvals are given, and we are not. Let's see. We go to Rana, who says, hey, how about Stephen Miller, the architect of much of the despicable policies that 45 put into action? He needs to be thrown in jail, too. So don't forget about Stephen Miller, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, this is why the next attorney general pick is going to be quite possibly the most important pick since the vice president. This attorney general will be hopping. And what we don't want is someone who's going to come in and say, well, let's just let bygones be bygones. Crimes were committed. They took a vote to literally kidnap kids from their parents and did it deliberately. So we need to have an attorney general who's going to come in and say, I need to make sure that no one ever does these things again.
We go to this letter from Amy, who says, I listen to the roundtable every morning. Y'all and Governor Cuomo have been carrying me through this time. I lived in New York City during 9/11, and the past 9 months have been much more traumatic. I just want to say, I love Linda Ellerbe. It was she who ignited this gorgeous discussion this morning, helping us all to feel during this terrifying time. So Tessie writes, this moment in time is the culmination of decades of a long Republican strategy to get the base to vote against their own interests. Get the base's backing on abortion or gay marriage or taxes or not wearing a mask, in spite of all the economics and social harm Republican policies do, i.e. cutting food stamps, restricting access to Medicaid, demonizing immigrants, etc. Cynthia writes, is it just me who thinks that the first to receive the coronavirus vaccine, elderly, a nursing home, and the largely low-wage staff, are actually being used as human disposable? It says disposable, but I would take it as guinea pigs. Anyone?
If people are going to be that distrustful of government, and there are, that they're not going to take this vaccine, they obviously are doing it at considerable risk. If the FDA or whatever the agency, the CDC, approves the vaccine, I'll be there. I can't imagine why people wouldn't be.
Kim writes, the rage is real. I am an RN, frontline worker. I am so enraged in the spring and summer of the lackadaisical attitudes of the Trumpers, the weddings, the concerts, the motorcycle rallies, Trump rallies without social distancing or mask wearing, were a slap in the face. We frontline workers just shook our heads and saw how disrespectful these people were acting, not only toward us, but toward their own family and neighbors, recklessly spreading the virus. I finally had to let the rage go. People who don't believe in science and recommendations of experts are choosing their fates. Unfortunately, they will drag others down with them. It's sad. Protect yourself and your loved ones. Do good for others, such as donating to food shelves and animal shelters. Bring light to the darkness. Hard to argue with that.
Chris, you know, if I can make a quick comment,
please.
On that. There's been some projects that were carried out during the coronavirus period by the state that were considered critical infrastructure. And one of them was a walking, hiking, running trail from Albany to Hudson, the Albany Hudson Electric Trail. And it has been a boon to this community out here from Hudson to Albany. It goes through every tiny village in Columbia County. And I have literally heard people complain that they made a trail for people to walk on. I mean, just like they're wasting our money. All we got out of coronavirus is the opportunity to improve our health and our mental health in this time. And little projects like this are very important.
Well, they certainly are. Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. Rob says, how was Governor Cuomo able to promise delivery of the vaccine on December 15th that hasn't been approved yet? Well, we're assuming approval, correct? Would that be your take, Ira?
That's right. That should be approved before the next week or so. And they say that as soon as there's approval, they'll be shipped. So I think also it's a relatively small number that we're talking about. If I read it correctly, is it 170,000 doses? And that doesn't necessarily mean 170,000 people, because you got to get it two shots. So that's half of 170. And even as a journalist, I could figure that one out. So but I don't think he went out on a limb.
Gene says, as I listen this morning, a thought occurs. While Alan praises Biden for his restraint and presidential behavior, rightly, a flashback comes to my tiny mind. I hear echoes of the hopes regarding the Mueller investigation and how it was going to fix everything. I plan to continue to hope for the best and prepare for the worst. Well, there's a lot to be said there, right? But it is a different administration. Linda?
Well, I believe that we are all hoping for the best. There are too few of us preparing for the worst. I don't know what to say to this. We are all hoping for the best. We have seen in the last year what relying on nothing but hoping for the best gets us.
And Malcolm's doing enough preparing
for all
of us.
I like the woman who wrote in. I'm really the healthcare worker who wrote in about her rage. I'm welcome any thoughts anybody has to help me with my rage, which I can't seem to rein in.
When does it manifest itself? Meaning
every
what?
Every time I open a newspaper, obviously I'm reading it digitally.
Yep.
Every time I listen to the news, every time I listen to more of this madness being reported as news, Iowa's suffering really badly today. Iowa has a real high death count. This just in, Iowa didn't take precautions. Therefore, Iowa is suffering. Just translate that all over the country, all over this country. It stops being news. News that is news every day stops being news and becomes fact. We are now in a country, in a place and time, where the fact is that we won't do simple precautions to save our own lives or the families or the people we love or people we've never met.
And I don't know how, and you talk about for me, the set off has been just the numbers and as they grow. And again, that is, as you say, that's fact. The numbers just keep on climbing. It's just fact, right? I mean, it stops being news at some point. Which is really hard to.
This is what happened in AIDS, Joe.
Yeah.
During the AIDS crisis, the numbers were so overwhelming and kept growing, and the news media went from not covering it well in the beginning to covering it, and then to fall off the coverage of it and let the coverage go by, which was our mistake as journalists. And the reason it happened was simply that news that is news every day stops being news and becomes fact. As journalists, we report news, not fact.
We're going to pause there. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have a wonderful panel this morning. We welcome your letters. We'll move on to some other topics as well. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll continue after this news break from the BBC.
Beep. So long, Nashville, Tennessee. You can't have what's left of me. And as far as I can tell.
Playing cuts this morning from Chris Stapleton's new album, Starting Over. You can see our playlist, as you always can see our playlist, online, wamc.org/roundtable. We have many important letters about many important topics, but I'm going to start with Cheryl's, who says, Linda, is it true that that Murphy Brown was based on you?
Well, that was not a question I was prepared to answer.
Well, it was for Cheryl.
No, it is not. It is not. It was based on a compilation of a number of us. I never said it was based on me. People got that impression simply because Diane English and Candice Bergen called me and asked could they come and follow me around. They called. Okay, Diane English called and she said, we want to put together a television series about a network anchor woman whose mouth gets her in trouble constantly. Can we come and follow you around for a month?
I'm your girl.
Well, it's
so
hard
to... I'm going
to
say it's not based on me.
Yeah. You were on that show once or twice as a guest?
Three times, actually.
Three times.
And I learned a valuable... This is way off of the important stuff here, folks. The first time I was on there, I'm not an actress. I have never had any training in acting, never wanted to be an actor. And Murphy Brown is a scripted show, and I had agreed to come on. They had asked me to come on and play myself, something I had never agreed to do in a movie, which you get asked to do a lot if you're on television and news person, generally so they can make fun of you in a movie on what you do for a living. In this case... I said yes to the Murphy Brown thing because they were very nice people. I went out there, and they give me the script, and I'm, you know, fumbling my way through it. What do I know about it? And at one point, Diane English, the executive producer, says, you're just not saying this line right. And you're not saying it Ellerbe enough like. You're not saying, you don't sound Ellerbe like. And I thought to myself, well, I'm Linda Ellerbe. If I say it, isn't that Ellerbe like? No, apparently it wasn't. So finally I said, Diane, she said, I wrote every line for you, saying it in my head, Ellerbe-like. And I said, okay, please say the line Ellerbe-like, and I will say it exactly the way you say it. And that is what I did. I am not capable of acting. I learned it is very hard work. Playing yourself is not the same thing as being yourself.
Well, okay, that was a diversion, but a lovely one. Very, very fun. Let's go back to other topics at hand here. Alu writes, won't people be more inclined to receive the virus injection, or the jab, as the British call it, if they have to present a certificate of inoculation or proof of COVID antibodies with their job application or airline check-in? Well, I don't know about airline check-in, but I know that the job certainly of people, there are certain jobs where it will be mandatory, right? Malcolm, wouldn't that seem to make sense?
You know, that's a fear. And I have friends in Europe, and every once in a while they start delving into the Big Brother is going to control us.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way that you have to travel now is you have to have an all clear certificate or a COVID negative certificate. That's 96 hours in advance. And in many countries, they'll give you an instant check on the way in. And I'm constantly hearing people saying, well, you know, there's rumors out there that Bill Gates and the governments all want us to have a COVID negative card in which your status can be updated. If you get positive, they turn off your ability to travel. You know, I always thought that was far-fetched. But the question you're going to have to ask yourself is, as we move forward, how are you going to do it? Are you going to have to bring a piece of paper with you to, you know, to operate in move, you know, to go to a movie theater or to, you know, take a job that requires people to have their mask off? I don't know. I hope not. I hope we can just get 60% of people vaccinated and a natural herd immunity takes place.
Mike asks about the panel's reactions to Mike Pompeo inviting 900 people to an indoor Christmas party and other White House holiday events with little masking, leading by example, question mark. Ira?
Well, who could be surprised? I mean, I don't know that this is an overlap, but Trump is having a series of Christmas parties with a lesser number of people at each one. That's just their MO. If you saw the clip the other night of one of those parties, and he comes down the balcony, much like he came down the escalator at Trump Tower, he wasn't wearing a mask. So it's they're going to go out kicking and screaming. This is the way they are. Pompeo is a particularly despicable fellow in my view, but not just for that reason.
Linda?
Yeah, well, just briefly to that, and then I want to go back to what Mike was talking about the vaccine. But on the Pompeo thing, I go back to what I said earlier. If he's going to be a fool, it's really up to are you one of the 900 people invited, and are you going to go? Personal choice.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, going back to the vaccine, I have kind of a different take on it, I think, Mike, but I think I could probably be talked right out of it. I think that my fears are, quite frankly, not that we're going to have to carry cards saying we've been vaccinated or that people won't want to get vaccinated or people will be forced to be vaccinated. I think that the minute this vaccine, if it shows to be viable, I think the opposite's going to be true. You're going to have a black market going in vaccinations. People are going to want vaccinations immediately, instantly, that aren't available. And yes, the rich and the well-connected are going to get them.
We have
That's
letters.
That's how it works, and we all know this.
Right. Exactly. We have letters on a couple of fronts. One is helping Linda with her rage, where Frankie says mental health is just as important as physical health. Please see a therapist. And then we go to another. This is on Twitter, actually. It said, hey, Linda, I installed a dartboard in my garden to help with my anger during the pandemic. Throwing sharp pointed objects seems to help a bit. There you go.
I have a large knife and I cook. That helps too. And I have a cleaver and a meat pounder. That all helps. And all of those things help. And throwing darts helps. And they're a good deal less pricey than therapy. Nor do I think I need therapy when my rage, in fact, I believe to be righteous.
Yeah, being in therapy, what I notice is that my therapist often joins in my bitching. So it becomes a very loud, we agree with each other. I definitely found the right person to hear me out on this stuff. Rick says, I am older and retired, and as I think about vaccine distribution, I have to wonder if it wouldn't be better that aside from the frontline workers to inoculate children first so parents could get back to work and also teens and 20-year-olds, because they seem to ignore safety the most, us older folks can be patient and stay safe. Well, the testing is still out on kids. Even there have been reports just yesterday about from, I think, 12 and under, right? So that's still being worked out.
I'm 76 years old, and I don't want to go to the end of the line just because I'm 76 years old.
Yeah, don't wait it out.
I'm more likely to die than a child. That's selfish old me.
I think you're in that block where they call it high risk, and so I think people of our age and above will probably be a higher priority than kids.
Let's see.
I wonder how they
do
it. We'll wind up distributing.
And in fact, I hope that the healthcare workers, frontline workers of all sorts, all of these people should be inoculated first. There is no question about that.
Yeah, they're priority.
We know what the order ought to be. The question is, will it be followed?
Adam writes, Malcolm, you can take this first. Guys, I love your show, but I'm so frustrated that you're not taking on what we are facing. You talk amongst yourselves incredibly eloquently, but you do not take on the right-wing media to dispel and delegitimize the messages directly. Call out Rush for promoting war and fake election-wise. Call out specifics in the narratives directly as they come. Call out Ingram, the Tuckers, etc. Get on their shows and have them on yours and crush the lie. Get your hands dirty. The narrative they develop is faster, and you are only in the react position. How horrible, instead of the truth to power position. If you don't, the Democrats are over. Malcolm, how would you like to respond to that, given your position as a frequent guest on these shows?
Clearly, he doesn't look at my Twitter feed. I mean, all I do is call out people. And in fact, I've been an inadvertent guest on Tucker Carlson's show, only in the sense that he takes clips from MSNBC and tries to attack me on his show. And it usually ends up with tens of thousands of people, calling him out and humiliating him for being such an idiot. So, yes, we do this. We take people on all the time. But with regards to the stuff that I'm monitoring right now, which is a professional tactic, we all I can do is warn you. And that's why I'm putting out another book here about this coming right-wing insurgency.
Book alert. Book alert. Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, it's not coming out right away. But I didn't want to write another Trump book ever. And then I see all these people literally talking civil war. And the only way we can get it out there is to get it out there. Get out so that you can read it and be warned of why the Proud Boys are dangerous and why, you know, these militias and the three percenters and the Oath Keepers, they're all part of this, part and parcel of this cult of personality of Donald Trump. And they are ready to fight. They're just waiting a word from him. This, you know, Trump is going to be like Saddam Hussein out of power soon. And, you know, insurgency is not the wrong word to describe how they're thinking.
And I think most of us who have been doing media commentary have spoken of the right wing and the specific people that Malcolm just mentioned. Problem is, the people who need to hear about the criticism are not listening to us. They're listening only to those people.
Yes. And George writes and says, I've been saying for years that the right wing has been desperate to bring back segregation and Christian nationalism. They would love to start a new civil war and have said so openly because they think that this time they will win. We go to Christopher, who says, when Malcolm said that Trump has harnessed the inner demon of up to 70 million Americans, I think he has that right on target. In reading history, it has always been mind-boggling to me how Hitler harnessed the power of hatred against the Jews and the world. Well, I understand it now that it is being played out as it is playing out in front of our eyes. Thank you, Malcolm, for putting it in clear terms.
You're welcome.
We go to Jim, who says, panel, please recognize your own biases. You do the same thing as the right. And let's
what
see.
What does that mean, that we're not speaking factually?
Or in complete sentences?
Oh, I love you all. We are out of time, unfortunately, but I want to thank you all. Alan had to leave early, so we thank him very much. We also, of course...
We're leaving early?
Well, we're not leaving early. Alan left early. Alan has a different agent, apparently.
Are we thanking Alan because he left early? Is that why we're thanking
No, we're done. So I was just thanking Alan to let people know why, if they hadn't heard him in a few moments, that they would know why. That he was still okay. He had just left. My thanks to the rest of the group, of course. Ira Fussfeld, always great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe.
Malcolm Nance, we'll talk to you soon. Linda, always a pleasure. We'll be in touch next week, I believe. We'll be right back with a Congressional Corner on WAMC.